The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
The final hour has arrived, and we are really looking forward to the guest list this hour. Later on, we will have the chancellor at Vanderbilt, Dr. Diermeier, who grew up in Berlin. He was the provost at the University of Chicago before coming here. We have Doering in the next segment, and we begin with Marty Smith. We always like
that
to,
is a star-studded
like
group, Paul Feinbaum. That is a lot of good hair. A lot of good hair. Doering's got a good head of hair.
The chancellor's got good hair.
It's hot in Nashville.
It's getting better.
Hot-ish. I haven't been here in a while. When was the last time you were here?
It's been a while. A
couple years ago?
Yeah.
Me too.
I haven't been here since I don't think I've been. The COVID year, I think.
I know you talked to Coach Lee. I'm just so impressed with him, and I've been impressed with him since I met him. The first time that I met him, he was Notre Dame's defensive coordinator for Brian Kelly, which you've spent plenty of time this week.
Yeah, he's
chatting about.
His name has been mentioned.
Mr. Kelly. But Clark has this very quiet, calm, measured self-confidence that has an amazing way of building these young men in a holistic type of way. And I admire that about him. I mean, I know a lot of people watching your show probably made fun of him about what he said at SEC Media Days.
I
know you made fun of him about what he said at SEC Media Days. And, I mean, it was a hell of a bold statement to say you're going to build the best program in the country, especially with where they are right now. But I just appreciate his approach. I mean, I remember, it's funny, Dabo Swinney signed that massive contract yesterday, I think, right? It got announced. And I remember when Coach Swinney was hired, and everybody was like, what?
Yeah, it was.
Like, what? The wide receiver coach who was selling commercial real estate 20 minutes ago, that guy? And now
he called me once about his career.
He's built a powerhouse down in Clemson. And so you never know, man. They got a long, long, long way to go here. And he'd be the first to tell you that, and he probably did tell you that.
Real estate's not a bad business, though.
I mean, Dabo apparently was good at it.
He was.
Apparently made a lot of money doing that. But now he's making $11.5 million a year at Clemson University. Good for him.
So what's the Marty party been up to this season?
Well, I spent last week in Athens ahead of our week one episode. Spent a lot of time with Kirby Smart, a lot of time with those great tight ends that they have, Brock Bowers and Darnell Washington, who both played amazingly well against Oregon and will continue to do so the rest of the year. You know, imagine if they get Eric Gilbert really going. I mean, that tight end room is unbelievable. And then, of course, had the great opportunity to sit down with Stetson Bennett for the second or third time. And I'm just so impressed with him as a person. He is not at all affected or impacted by any outside noise, good or bad. And he is such a tremendous leader. I mean, you know, he wrote a movie and is continuing to write a movie. The performance he had on Saturday.
What's it about?
Well, think about it. He is a walking movie.
Yeah, I mean, is he writing about him? Is it a self-portrait?
No, but he should. I mean, when you consider.
Somebody should.
When you consider that all he ever wanted to do was touch the Sanford Stadium grass, right? And then it doesn't work out, and he goes to JUCO and comes back and buried on the depth chart. Plays Baker Mayfield on the scout team.
Right.
Ultimately leads them to the first national title in 40 years. It's pretty remarkable. And asking him last week how that's impacted and altered his life was a really unique conversation. He'll never buy a beer in that state again. Good for him. But
no.
I wondered how it impacted his relationship with Kirby Smart. And the way that it impacted his relationship with Kirby Smart is Kirby's old school. And after that fumble in the national championship, I mean, Todd Monken opened that playbook up and just let Stetson rip it, and he ripped it.
Yeah.
And ultimately, they win it. So, really, really a great time with him, and I can't wait to see what he does the rest of the year, because they showed me a lot last Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I'm curious because, I mean, I know it's not a big issue now since he had the game that he did, but was it ever a debate? I mean, how did he ever consider not coming back?
He did not tell me that. Okay. He said, because I asked him, why come back? I mean, you could ride off into the sunset with that amazing ending.
Right.
And he's like, man, I'm living the dream. I mean, I'm living the dream. He is the quarterback for the team that he grew up dreaming about.
Did it help that JT Daniels bailed out, or was that no longer really an issue?
I would certainly imagine so, but I think that Stetson's so dogged, he wouldn't have cared. He would have thought he would go into camp and beat JT out anyway.
Right, right.
That's just kind of how he's wired. And it's great for – I mean, Georgia has 4 and 5 stars everywhere, and they all look right at him. And they talk – like guys like Jordan Davis and N'Kobe Dean and all of those guys told me that last year.
Right.
And so he's just a special personality, very thoughtful in his answers, very considerate in what you ask him and how he answers those questions. Not everybody's that way, as you know.
Talking to Marty Smith, these guys, they don't
care. They're just doing the thing. We got guys over here just setting up beautiful TV shots and yelling at us.
Does that happen to you often, or is it – because when we have other guests, that does not happen.
Well, as I was doing a television live shot
over
there –
and the most important thing is they want to make sure they get these fans right.
Make sure they get you guys in there.
Yeah.
As I was doing something over there on the other stage – I heard your producers talking to me the entire time that I was over there. So, yes, it does.
Yeah, and they were asking me, Marty, if I was hearing you. And I was actually hoping I would, because maybe I would learn something, because I wasn't learning anything elsewhere. But
how about John Daly told us that he was drunk on TV?
Yeah, I never could tell.
Did you have him on? I can't remember if he was here last Friday. He wasn't, right?
No.
Okay.
He's
an amazing person.
No, I really have gotten to know him over the years covering the golf tournaments in Birmingham and other places. And I don't know whether he was drunk or not, but it doesn't matter because that's just who he is.
Look, man, in this world.
How do you top that, by the way?
I don't know how we – I mean, we're done. McGee and I are done.
What's tomorrow? I want to know what
– Do better than that.
You have to beat that.
I don't know how we're going to do that. You have to help us out. You got to come on our show and do something outlandish to help us – go viral again.
I don't think so. It's like, I mean, anything. I think I have something.
You got something in the back pocket?
That could break what Daly did. I could shatter that number.
Are you going to share it with me, or are you just going to do it?
But here's it would probably cost me my job.
Nothing's going to cost you your job, man. You're Teflon. You're Teflon, but – it was so cool to have him on. And one thing that we want, especially in today's world, is authenticity.
Yeah.
And he's nothing.
I mean, who are guys that you want? I mean, you know a lot of these guys, and you've had most of them, but who out there remains elusive to you?
I want Michael Jordan, man.
Okay.
I want MJ. I want to sit him down and just talk about the whole thing. And he's been my hero since I was in sixth grade or something. Okay. And so I would love to have an opportunity to really dive in with him.
You want me to help? Or?
I mean, yeah, if you just hit him up on your – I know you got your cell phone sitting there. Just send him a text for me.
Oh, you said Michael Jordan. I thought you said LeBron. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, you got his too. Yeah. Who's the GOAT, Michael or LeBron?
Michael.
Michael, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not here to dismiss LeBron, but he's not even a legitimate conversation.
I mean, there are certain athletes, and there's three that I can think of, and as far back as you go, there may be more for you. There are three during my lifetime that were just stone-cold killers. MJ, Tiger, Kobe.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think LeBron's overrated.
I don't think he's overrated.
There's too much drama. Michael Jordan did not have that drama.
Well, Michael Jordan didn't have social media and all that mess either.
It wouldn't matter.
Imagine if there was social media when MJ was playing.
He wouldn't care. He wouldn't deal with it.
Well, maybe not. Charles is that way. You know, Charles Barkley has no fear. Charles Barkley tells you exactly what he thinks.
I mean, how many times have you sat in a meeting and they say, we want a show that's like that show? I mean, enough. You don't replicate Charles Barkley.
He's amazing. And, again, it goes back to authenticity. It's the same exact premise that we love about JD.
Okay, so after Michael, assuming Michael's not going to –
I'd love to interview Eddie Vedder, lead singer of Pearl Jam.
That's an interesting one.
He fascinates me, the way he writes and the authenticity that he has.
I like
the
him.
Passion, vulnerability is such a powerful trait to me. And Eddie
I
Vedder.
I love musicians.
Me too.
You're friends with a bunch of them, but I'm always just fascinated with
them. They have, like, one great thing about guys like him and the great songwriters here in Nashville. I have so many great friends in this town who are musicians. The music allows them to share.
I see McGee over there.
That's the greatest musician in town.
Does McGee get in the way when you're with
him? he's over there on his phone, working on his TikTok.
I mean, you're with all these big-time guys. I mean, I'm sure McGee, I mean, you at some point you have to say, Ryan.
I just throw the Heisman up. Do you have TikTok?
I've heard of it. I let Laura handle that.
We're talking about you, man.
Well, I was just trying to say to him.
Did you take a TikTok?
When he's around, you know, whether it's Luke Combs or Eric Church or, I mean, really famous people. But you, by the way, you made me a fan of these guys, by the way. And then
I'm a huge fan of those.
McGee shows up. I mean, isn't he like the – usually it's the little brother. I mean, don't you have – like, Ryan, don't you have –
Well, he's older than me.
I know, but
– Marty knows all the famous people. All the famous people I know.
They're just walking through the shot with ladders. What is going on, man? This is crazy. Vanderbilt, you're wild. 5.6 GPAs, and they are on one on a Friday afternoon.
They're wrapping me up, but I don't really want to wrap this up. I'm just now getting to the
You're never going
to
have another conversation quite like this. It's all we need is a couple cold ones. It's Friday after 5, Paul.
Okay. Unfortunately, we'll just continue this next time.
I mean, I'm all in, man. I love chatting with you.
Okay. We'll get – and I'll check on Michael for you.
Call Paul. Yeah, text Michael for me. See if you can get him
I got a guy that texts him for me. I don't want him to see my name pop up on his phone.
Don't listen to the rat poison, y'all. No rat poison.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome back as fans here are excited about an undefeated Vanderbilt team. How about that? We'll talk to the chancellor of this university in about 15 minutes. Our next guest, certainly Phi Beta Kappa at his school, Chris Doering, joining us to talk about the weekend's games. Hey, Chris, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good to be with you, Paul. How you doing?
Thank you very much. We're doing great. Let's start with the most obvious game that I'm sure you've been hearing a lot about, and it's the transformation of the Kentucky-Florida game and all the things that have changed. You live down there. I mean, how crazy has this week been?
It is. It's crazy, right? Just the transformation, as you mentioned. I mean, for so long, all we talked about was the domination by Florida, 31 straight years of defeating Kentucky. And then all of a sudden, in the last four, you split 2-2, including a win where Kentucky went to the Swamp and showed that they could win under the lights in prime time there. So I don't think Kentucky's at all intimidated anymore by Florida. I think they could go in and believe that they can play with the Gators. And I do think things have even changed some from where I thought this game was going to be in the preseason. You know, I famously amongst the Florida fans picked Kentucky to win it in the offseason, and that was because I thought Kentucky was going to be able to run the football a little bit better than what they did against Miami. I thought they'd be able to protect a little bit better than what they did against Miami of Ohio, and I didn't think, quite honestly, that Florida's offense would be quite as good and quite as dynamic as they looked. And a lot of people want to talk about Anthony Richardson, but it wasn't just him. I was surprised, Paul, by the offensive line. I thought they were more physical than what I expected, and the running backs, they were a nice complement to what Anthony Richardson did on the ground. So I think these things have changed a lot since what we kind of looked at it back in July when we were at SEC Media Days.
So has it changed enough to change the outcome and see the Gators start off 2-0?
You know what? I did not at all believe that they would be able to do it. I know there's been some shuffling on the offensive line and no horsey's back for Kentucky. But for whatever reason, I think Florida is going to win this game. And I think it comes down to that Florida defensive line against Kentucky's offensive front. I think that's the one deficiency for Florida. I think that's the Achilles heel, is they're not up to what you would expect typically from a Florida defensive front. You go back and look at that second half of the game between Utah and Florida last week. They gave up almost 7 yards a carry in the second half. I think that indicates that they were oversized, and I think that they were very thin and starting to get fatigued. But the one thing that will hurt Kentucky this week, no Chris Rodriguez. The running back room has pretty much been decimated, which is crazy to think about with all the talent there. But I think that's the matchup within the matchup that's going to decide the game. I'm going to give Florida the edge there.
South Carolina and Arkansas, we all know the backstory here. The Gamecocks have a shot next week with a win here to they're going to host Georgia, whether they want to or not, but the enthusiasm for that game would go through the roof with a win. Are they going to get one in Razorback land?
You know, Paul, it was great to be in Columbia last week. I got a chance to call that game against Georgia State, and all of the talk in the offseason was about Spencer Rattler. Well, the storyline was that the defense and special teams dominated that game, and the offense was actually not as big of a factor, primarily because of the offensive line issues that they had. All five starters returned, and all offseason we were told how much better that group was going to be, but Spencer Rattler was under constant pressure the entire night, never really got a chance to set his feet and throw, and I think it's a shame because there's a lot of talent. I think the most talent in the skill positions around the quarterback that South Carolina's had in a long time. But that is all a moot point if you can't protect. The biggest plays he made were scramble plays where he was able to keep it on the run and make some guys miss and allow receivers to uncover. So I think the difference is that Barry Odom's defense, they were flying around last week against Cincinnati. I think the ball carriers for Cincinnati averaged like 0.26 yards before contact. And that does not bode well against the South Carolina offensive line that really was not good in pass protection or run blocking last week. So I'm going with Arkansas on this one, Paul.
Tennessee and Pitt in Pittsburgh.
This is my favorite game of the weekend. You know, it's ironic because I think that loss last year to Pitt was something that didn't sit well with the fans, didn't sit well with the players. It's one they felt like they could have had and let get away. But ironically, that was the change in the trajectory of this team. That's where we saw Hendon Hooker get inserted into the starting role. From there, that offense has just been rolling. In fact, the last four ball games, they've scored at least 45 points or more. I just don't see Pitt being able to, one, slow them down because of the tempo and the execution that the offense has. But two, I don't think they're going to be able to score with the Tennessee Vols. I think they just got too much offense, and this one gets a little bit of a revenge serve to the folks from Pitt.
One or two other games before we get to the big one here in Nashville. Mississippi State's got a late game at Arizona. This game, a little bit hard to figure out. What have you figured out on this game?
2 weeks in a row, right? I mean, I think Mississippi State's suffering from what a lot of Pac-12 teams suffer from, and that's not people here on the East Coast being able to watch them because of the game ending so late due to weather last week. Will Rogers was amazing. Threw the ball 49 times, completed 78% of those passes, including 5 touchdowns. He's got a bunch of weapons around him that, even though they're young by years, they've played a lot of football together. They played a lot of football in this offense. happens. And it's fun to watch the rhythm and everybody being on the same page. This thing's kicking at all cylinders right now. And I just don't think that Arizona's going to be able to score with what Mississippi State can do. Now, obviously, there's a great storyline with the quarterback for Arizona having committed to Mike Leach at Washington State before Leach left for Starkville. But I just don't think, as much as they probably improved in Jed Fish's second year there in Tucson, I don't think that they have the offense to score with what Mississippi State will be able to put up.
And finally, the game here in Nashville, a chance for Vanderbilt to go 3-0 on the season. Chris Doering, you going to make these fans happy, or are you going to ruin their night?
Yeah, this is the best story of the year so far for me. I mean, we were in Atlanta at Media Days. We heard all of these players talking about playing championship football. I think a lot of us laughed about that, but that's exactly what they've been doing. I mean, they've completely changed what they've done dynamically on offense, and Mike Wright has a lot to do with that. 10 touchdowns in the first two ball games of the season. We know about his athleticism and speed. I think the thing to me, though, is the resiliency. You know, where in the past things have happened poorly for Vandy, and it's been a downhill spiral. I think that Clark Lee, that's maybe where you've seen the biggest impression in his fingerprint on this team, is the way that they've been even-keeled. If something good happens, they don't get too high. Something bad happens, they don't get rattled. They just keep playing for 60 minutes. So I know Sam Hartman's back. I know this point spread has ballooned since his return has been announced. But I honestly believe that this is a game that Vanderbilt's going to win, and it's going to exceed the Vegas win total on the year that was set at 2.5. They're going to have 3 before September's even over with.
Vanderbilt wins against Wake Forest, according to our expert. Thank you, Chris. We are going to take a break here. When we come back, we will speak to the chancellor here at Vanderbilt University, Daniel Dearmeyer. He'll join us right here after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back. We're live for the final 30 minutes of the show. We are live. We are in Nashville, of course, on the campus of Vanderbilt University. And we don't often have this type of an opportunity on a football Friday afternoon, but Chancellor Daniel Dearmeyer joins us here. Seems like you just got here, but when Chancellor show up in the middle of COVID, it definitely changes the dynamics of your stay. Good afternoon, and thank you for being here.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
I'm going to talk a little bit about you for a second
Yeah.
before we get to Vanderbilt. But you were born in Berlin.
Yeah.
And naturally a soccer fan.
Yes.
So you come over here, you go to school in this country, and obviously decided to stay with a very distinguished career. I'll get to that in a second. But what was it like?
I'm a first generation student, and I got a fellowship from the German government to come here when I was 23. And I came literally with like 2 suitcases and $1,000, arrived at LAX airport, immediately got lost on the freeway. And had a great time there. But one of the things that was really amazing, I was there when there was the big rivalry between UCLA and USC. It's like Troy Aikman was their quarterback, and I was at USC. We had Rodney Peet, and we were undefeated till the last game, and 80,000 people in the Coliseum. So it was a great way to kind of get to know this country I'd never been to before. But it also was a great experience for me that, it taught me what college athletics can do for a university community. And I think that there are very few things that can bring a community together as much as athletics. So that was a wonderful experience. In my first weeks and month and my first year in the United States. And so it was a valuable lesson to me and something that I really cherish to this day.
And not to go through your entire career, but you spent a lot of time in Chicago at Northwestern, and then you became the provost at the University of Chicago, which is known in the historical backstory of college football as a former member of the Big Ten.
Yes, but first Heisman Trophy winner, University exactly. of Chicago. That's right. Yes.
We ask this of coaches sometimes, but you have this incredibly distinguished career in your field. And you're at the University of Chicago, which is at the zenith of academia, and this opportunity comes.
Yes, So I was provost there, which is kind of like the number 2 in the university. You have responsibility for everything, academic, research, education, and so forth. And after a while, I felt that I was ready to become a chancellor, president, and then opportunities you know, people call you, and I wanted to make sure that I was at a place that was a good fit for me. And there was also an opportunity to really have an impact, to make a difference. And, you know, so it's a long process. They start talking to you, and then you have a couple of meetings and then more meetings. And but I really was taken by the culture of what Vanderbilt is. And, you know, it's a very aspirational place. It really is committed to, you know, world-class research and education, but it's a very collaborative place. It's very much a community. And I really love that. And it's something that was extremely useful for us during the COVID years. I mean, I started July 1, 2020, right in the middle of it. Of course, as you know, they brought me a little bit earlier to at least, you know, kind of help a little bit with the thinking in March already, you know, 2020. But we came together as one community. And that was hugely important. And we're very happy of how we dealt with the challenges. We're a much stronger university than we were 2 years ago, really, on any dimension. But it was possible because of our culture and of the values that we share, and that we really came together as one to deal with the challenges.
Chancellor, being in academia, certainly you had been through an endless stream of committees interviewing and looking at the DM. And when you're now going through that, it had to be a fascinating experience. Because it's quite a process.
It's quite a process, and I think what you do is there's an initial kind of sense of what you have about a place, and then you learn more about it, and then you kind of realize at some point or not, would be a good fit. And then, you know, fortunately, they thought I was a good fit for them, so that was that all worked out. But it's important to go through that process because it's, you know, you want to be at a place that you really feel at home, and where you feel that there's a good match between what you want to do as a chancellor president and what the university wants to do.
I'm sure. I act like I know. I've never been through anything like that. You lay out a plan. You just don't say, yeah, I like the campus.
Yes.
It's great. Hire
me.
When you come in during COVID, it certainly short-circuits your ideas.
Yeah, we had it all planned out. I stepped down from my prior role on February 1st, 2020, with the idea of having a really structured, have a well thought out transition plan. And all of that was out of the window. And so we had to just kind of refocus, change, and focus on what we had to do, which was, you know, the biggest challenge in higher education, in the history of higher education, arguably, certainly, you know, since the war. And it was amazing how quickly you had to work together, how you had to rely on each other, that there was a sense of coming together, what's our purpose, what our values, and how do we make this work.
We're chatting with Chancellor Daniel Dearmeyer of Vanderbilt University, and on that subject, because you've spent a lot of time studying both the political and economic platforms of society, and then you're coming in on what started as the worst pandemic in American history and maybe world history, and then it becomes a political football.
Yes.
As you were watching all this through the prism of your training and your background, how do you navigate that?
I think one very important part is that when you deal with these crises and you deal with these challenges, is that you have to go back to what you're all about, what your values are, what your purpose is. And that was crucial. And then the second thing that we did was really not to think about it just as a threat, but also think about it as an opportunity.
Right.
And it was an opportunity for us to come together. And it also was an opportunity for us to, you know, to do some things that would advance the university. So we were one of the very few universities in our peer set, you know, kind of leading private research universities, that brought all our students back on campus. We had 85% of the students back on campus. Only the international students that, because of visa restriction, couldn't come, weren't there. And we had, you know, most of our classes in person. The entire campus was restructured in the sense of, like, you know, everything was a classroom, and how do we make sure that we do it in the safest much way we can. And then we also decided is that we want to invest in research when nobody else was doing it. So when nobody was hiring, we're committed $100 million to hire new faculty and bring leading faculty to Vanderbilt. And that, I think, that really has paid off. So we were looking at this not so much as, oh my God, how do we get through this? But we were thinking about this, how do we make this our proudest moment? And how do we really step up as a community to deal with the challenge, but to also use these challenges to advance the university? And that worked really well.
At some point, the conversation has to turn to athletics. It is
sure.
a critical part. and I've asked Candace this, and I think she's tired of the questions about the future
and how
you intermingle all this. But,
yeah.
but you come from I'm such a fresh perspective.
Yes.
How do you approach the balance? Because this is a world-class academic and research institution.
Yes.
And athletics is part of it.
Yes.
But by no means the first thing you think about when you hear the name Vanderbilt University.
Yes. Well, I think that one thing that I learned, you know, throughout my career and really early on was athletics is a wonderful way to create a sense of community in a university. And, you know, our alumni care deeply about it. Our students care deeply about it. The community cares deeply about these. And for us, it's important to fully embrace that. So one thing that I was very clear in, you know, we hired Candace at that time to make sure that, you know, there should be no daylight between me and the athletic director, and that athletics is as much part of Vanderbilt as the law school. And that's how we're thinking about it. And so what that means for us is that we want to be successful. We want to be, you know, we're in the, you know, in the most, you know, in the elite conference in the country, the leading athletic conference, and we're a proud founding member of that. And we want to be able to compete there in a way that's consistent with our values, and we believe we can, and we know that we have to make investments in that. We know that you know, we have some areas where things are going really great, and we have other areas where we need to do better. But we're committed to doing that. And we are, you know, Candace and I had extensive discussions on that about, you know, what it is, where do we need to go, what's necessary to compete in the SEC. But we love that challenge, we embrace that challenge, and we want to do it in a way that's consistent with who we are as a university.
You know what's going on around intercollegiate athletics because you're in on a lot of these
sure.
meetings. And I know it's a broad question, but a lot of people, from where I sit, just think this is now a money grab, and we're not talking about tens of millions. Now we're into the billions with the recent Big Ten deal. So I've asked you this in variations, but how do you stay true to what your principles are and what the school's principles are, considering what is going on around?
Yeah, I think I think we are probably looking at a period in college athletics where there will be the most change that we're going to see ever, certainly in a generation. That is, you know, everything from what's happening in it. You know, you mentioned TV deals, NIL, conference realignments, all that stuff. It's basically gonna change the way college athletics will look like. And for us, the sense is that everything that we do has to be driven by what's our purpose and what our values are. And, you know, we have every year we have $1 billion in research funding, you know. So, it's, you know, that's a lot of money that comes into the university to support that part of it. So I'm not worried so much about the money that's part of it. I'm worried about how do we make sure that we do this in a way that's consistent with who we are, and that we find a structure for college athletics that respects the values that we love about college athletics and doesn't distort that in a way that we're taking a wrong path. So so the money itself is you know, that's part of it. It's the reflection, I think, of the fact that so many people are so passionate about college athletics, and you know, this is a natural thing to happen. But the key to me is what are the frameworks? How do we think about the future of college athletics that this can thrive in the long run, and it's not being it's not kind of taking a wrong turn?
Fascinating conversation with Chancellor Dearmeyer. I can't thank you enough. I could do this all day.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Chancellor Dearmeyer
thank
joining
you.
Us from Vanderbilt University, one of the most
thank you.
Extraordinary conversations we've had here in a long time. We will take a break. Just a mere moments remaining before we say goodbye, at least until tomorrow morning. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.